Welcome to the pilot episode of Breaking the Panel. This episode was originally recorded in August of 2015 in front of a live studio audience. Well, except for that whole live studio audience part.
The year is 2015, and we, the geek, the nerd, the comic book fan, have inherited the Earth. The comic book now owns pop culture, and that's a worldwide phenomenon. Film, television, literature, even music. These days, it's all about the comics.
I am Arrow.
I'm Batman.
Supergirl?
What does S.H.I.E.L.D. stand for, Agent Ward?
I am Iron Man.
And I am Spider-Man.
Hulk. Smash.
We're living the comics life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to the inaugural episode of Breaking the Panel, where we cover everything in geekdom, comics, books, games, movies and TV, anything else that falls under the vein of comics. We're going to hit it with passion and excitement and some graphic nerdity.
Oh, boy.
I'm McFall. With me, as always, is my greatest episode helper ever, because now you're an elf, apparently.
Apparently.
Elfish Ibbot.
Hello. I don't have a little voice filter on my on my mixer for that. Yeah. Awesome. Welcome to the pilot.
It's so exciting.
Flying blind because the pilot's back here with the crew.
We're all drinking in the cabin, right? That's all we're doing. Right. And we could not do this. We could not have the magic we have without Klotz.
Yeah. Let's bag it up.
The topics of the week is what we're going to hit first. Comic-Con releasing San Diego Comic-Con specific content trailers. Now, this is something that Klotz and I held off on discussing because we hit this point long before we started doing the show. People went to San Diego Comic-Con. They release cool stuff all the time, right? Actually, I think you're a part of this conversation. Mm-hmm. I get the exclusiveness of it. I get you want people asses in seats. It's a big deal.
If they don't promise that it's something you can only see at Comic-Con, right, people aren't going to go, right? I mean, if they know, well, I can see that when I get back home.
But well, I think there's a different level to it. I mean, it's like New Media Expo. You could buy the pass to attend all the virtual ticket stuff, right? But it's not the same as being there and meeting people and being in that room. I read when one of the E3s, the new Zelda, Zelda hadn't been made in a long time, and a new Zelda trailer came up, and grown men screamed like girls. Okay, you don't do that when you watch the trailer in your home. You know, I was actually with you, Ibbot, when the Star Wars trailer first dropped.
I disagree completely.
Really?
Oh, yeah, dude. When I saw the Star Wars trailer, the first like full-length trailer when they released it online, my roommate and I were here in just in the house with nobody around squealing like children.
Nice.
Just like, and I like, you know, quiet at first, like all tensed up, every muscle in your body is just like taut, like a, you know, like a guitar string or something. And you're just like, oh, yes, yes.
All right, okay.
But there, to that point, I mean, you knew that it was coming. You know, it wasn't like you were in the room and they're saying, all right, yeah, well, we got some stuff to talk about. You know what? Let's just show you. And they dim the lights and nobody's expecting it, that sort of thing. Yeah. And you're, you know, as opposed to, cool, I'm clicking a link to a YouTube video that I know is the trailer for Star Wars. I'm going to get excited about it. No argument.
Yeah. When I'm in a movie theater and I see, and I know trailers are coming, but I don't know what they are. And I see something going on, like, oh, is that, could that be, you know, insert movie here, Star Wars. Could it be anything you're excited about that hadn't been out in a while? And then it is. There's that moment that you have that instead of going to watch my trailers on Hulu. And going to Hulu and goes, Star Wars trailer one. Mm-hmm. There's no surprise. There's no excitement.
Right. Yeah.
But in this day and age with cell phones and everything else, unless you confiscate cell phones, they're going to take video. Why don't you plan to release this immediately after the panel?
Yeah, or not, maybe not immediately after the panel, but maybe like a week later. For example, we're still waiting on seeing a preview for the Deadpool film, the trailer that was shown at Comic-Con. It's been a couple weeks. I think it's fair to say now is a good time for them to release it. Same thing with Legendary Pictures showed for the Warcraft movie, the upcoming Warcraft movie. These are things that have been leaked online. As soon as I see the opening few seconds and I see that it's somebody recording it on their camera, I know, number one, it's going to be shaky. I know it's going to be blurry. I know there are going to be crowd noises. I know I'm going to hear the guy holding the webcam or the smartphone going, oh, it's cool. Oh my God, look, it's, you know, stuff like that. And I don't want to hear any of that. I want to experience that for myself. And I hate to say it, but there's even a part of me that would still love to see these things completely by surprise in the movie theater, like you were describing. Can you imagine the feeling of walking in and going to see Ant-Man, which we all did recently?
Right.
And you didn't know that they were going to show a Deadpool trailer or the X-Men Apocalypse trailer, even better example. I know that's not MCU, but they could have shown that beforehand. And you didn't know it. You weren't expecting it. You hadn't seen it beforehand on YouTube or whatever. Just that feeling, that those chills, those goosebumps you get from like, oh my God, look at this. I'm seeing Psylocke for the first time being shown in a movie. I'm seeing Channing Tatum as Gambit or whoever it is. Who is it? It is somebody like that though. It's not.
I've ignored all of Taylor Kitsch anymore.
Yeah, it is Channing Tatum.
Yeah. He's not going to be in Apocalypse, though.
He's not?
No, he's been asked about it, and he is not in Apocalypse.
Oh, okay.
No, he's getting a standalone film.
Yeah, in 2016, it looks like.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
I did go to Ant-Man, right? I just forgot. Right? I had forgotten to show my son the new Batman versus Superman trailer. I don't know if he'd seen any of them. I had not shown him the new Star Wars at all. It just slipped my mind. He's never around when I'm thinking about it. So we're in the theater. Both of those trailers run, and the excitement on his face. He had that, oh my God, moment. And he saw, especially with Star Wars. Star Wars came out and said, Christmas. And he's like, I haven't told him it's appropriate when certain things happen to talk to him. He's like, all right, that's your one for tonight. Calm it down, boy. We're in the theater. But he was so pissed off he had to wait till Christmas. Then I had to turn around in the car later. It's like, you do realize Batman versus Superman is next summer. I think he almost cried. So let me take it back to DC for a second, because I don't know if there's a way other than self-control to say, okay, I'm not going to watch any of these until I see them by accident. That's awesome. But DC cried like babies, right? They did not handle this well, in my opinion. Oh, my God. Every time we squash a shaky cam, another one pops up because we're fans. And we want to see it.
Yeah.
Release it.
But we don't want that.
No, we don't. I don't want the shaky cam. But release the thing.
But that's the thing. Like, okay, so.
That answers the question, by the way. Are we going to have an explicit tag?
I don't know. My mic might beep it. I don't know. But I get excited. I'm sorry.
So we mentioned the Warcraft film, right? Mm-hmm. Now, back in November, they previewed that at BlizzCon. And it was exclusive only to people who were there. They also didn't show it on the live stream. So not only did they not release it wide, they didn't put it on the exclusive paid-for live stream. Yeah, the virtual ticket, which I was quite upset about because I really felt like, I mean, it wasn't cheap. You know, it was an expensive ticket to just watch it, you know, to stream it. I was like, I would like to have seen it. Now, what that did, though, is it built a ton of buzz, but then that buzz just died. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The people who went to BlizzCon were stoked and everybody else was just like, well, I've got nothing. So there's this point where all of the capital you've gained, all of the excitement capital you've gained from doing a super secret teaser trailer that you only showed to certain people is gone after a certain amount of time.
Yeah,
exactly.
Dissipates.
So right now is the timetable 1 to 2 weeks after Comic-Con. You've shown them the shaky cams are out there, but now release a high quality trailer. I mean, some firms have done it. Already, they already went and just like right away, they were like, oh, we showed it at Comic-Con a couple days later. Here's the real deal.
Right. You know? Suicide Squad. Good example of that. The Superman Batman extended trailer.
Because you want people to be amped up. Like you really, really want people to be amped up, but you don't want them to be judging your film. The people who are on the fence in particular, judging your film based on shaky, handheld,
crappy video audio. With terrible.
Yeah.
The Warcraft one that I saw had a guy who was like, oh, it's just a big computer. It's like Avatar. Like he was naysaying it. And I was like, it's a computer game. He made it to a film. Like, yes. Sorry, the orcs weren't available for film. They're protected.
They're all, yeah, exactly.
In the 2015 orc strike, we have to do what we can.
That's right. Here's what I'd like. I would pay, let me throw out a number, $15 a year. All right. And I'd subscribe to a service. And, you know, it's not like they give me an email that has a link saying Star Wars trailer, check it out. Here's the brand new Deadpool trailer. I'll be working in a spreadsheet. I'll be working on something else. And all of a sudden my screen will dim and it will show me unexpected. I'll get the Deadpool trailer. All of a sudden I'll see the Star Wars trailer.
As cool as that would be, that would be the worst thing for productivity.
Like, and now in a world.
And I think
where's my Word document?
You could make it like a Chrome plugin, right? And then like somebody's at work working on Chrome and then all of a sudden it keys in because they logged in and it's like, oh no. Sorry, boss. Right. Doesn't this look cool though? Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like there's just that time period between showing a few people and then showing everybody. Right now is a perfect example. We got Batman versus Superman has very mixed buzz. There are some people who are huge DC fans who cannot wait to see this film. There are people who hate DC who are like, it's going to be garbage. Look at how bad it is. There's Batman fans who don't like the edgy, you know, too edgy for you kind of Dark Knight Batman style. And right. So they just see this as a continuance of that, of more of that. People are lining up all over the place to criticize that film.
Yeah.
So don't let the only footage be out there be shaky handycam footage. Right. Show what you've got to show. And they've released, you know, a couple trailers a little bit, but like show the one you just showed in a reasonable amount of time. The same thing goes for Warcraft. They've done franchise films like that before that have bombed. Does anybody remember the D&D films from, you know, 10, 15 years ago?
I remember Final Fantasy.
With an S. I remember one. Do they make more than one?
Yeah, they made a couple more. I think some of them went directly to video. I think all of the rest of them went directly to video. But yeah, the first one with Bruce Payne, you know, is like...
Yes. Yes, I totally remember that.
And Jeremy Irons. I mean, that movie was bad. I was a teenager directed at the time when I saw it in the theater. Yeah. Well, he did the... what was that successful series there? Dungeon Siege. He did the Dungeon Siege movie with Jason Statham, and it was terrible.
Oh, it was awful, yeah. That's why I threw his name out. Oh, everything he touches.
Yeah, so bad.
2000 was the year that came out, and then it was followed by, I lost the page, Dungeons & Dragons Wrath of the Dragon God, which came out in 2005. Even the IMDb picture is the DVD case with the DVD sticking out of it. So, and then 2012, the book Dungeons & Dragons, The Book of Vile Darkness, which just a couple of years ago, I don't even remember
hearing.
Was that
a sci-fi original?
It sounds
like it could have been.
One of those two follow-up films, not that they're directly related to the first film, but, you know, the ones in the franchise. I heard one of them was actually kind of fun, like not a great film. You know, we're not talking Avengers MCU type stuff like quality, but like a fun little kitschy, campy film that you could enjoy. But that franchise has been destroyed by that terrible first film. So there's no chance of like salvaging that. So you really don't want that to happen to something really big and important like Warcraft.
Yeah.
And so that's where I'm at with it, is like, get it out there. The Deadpool thing, we wouldn't even have a Deadpool movie if somebody didn't put that test footage out.
That's true.
Right.
It almost got canceled, and the response from the net was so huge.
Well, it wasn't even that it was canceled. It was just in development limbo. Nobody wanted to throw money at it until it was leaked to the internet, and millions of super nerds were like, give us this foul creature.
We want to see this.
Give it to us. And it looks like it's going to be right in the vein of what you would expect out of a Deadpool film. I think, like, it rescued that. You know what I mean? Like, and so you want...
You got to wonder. Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question. So kind of back to the Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con discussion. And we talked a little bit about this when the topic first came up. If you could get a virtual ticket, kind of like what you do get for BlizzCon, where you pay, I can't remember, $75 or $60, and you can get it. You can either watch it online or watch it on DirecTV and get access to see all of the panels at San Diego Comic-Con and see some of these trailers. Would you do it?
Maybe.
It depends on the price.
Yeah,
but, you know, I think that's a service that should be offered. But I think that is a service that should be offered either close to for free or for free. And the reason being is it is invaluable marketing for anybody that has anything to present at that show. Just in the same way that SDCC is this huge marketing opportunity.
But you could say the same thing about BlizzCon. I mean, it's a, you know, it's an advertisement for all of their games. They're talking with the designers and saying, hey, what's coming up next year in this game? And what's, you know, what do players have to look forward to? I mean, all that really is marketing as well.
Right.
Oh, yeah. As cool as BlizzCon is, I don't know that I would ever go at this point, like if I'm honest, because having watched it, over the course of a few years now and stuff like right now, the situation with WoW, where most of the people who were amped for the expansion when BlizzCon was around aren't even playing the game anymore. And they showed us Overwatch. It's July. Where's Overwatch?
We don't even have a beta yet of Overwatch. Yeah.
So Heroes of the Storm, and some of those panels were really anemic. Like, they're like, yeah, we can't talk about this or that. This is the direction we're going. And they weren't great panels. They weren't panels that were selling their product. But SDCC is more in line with like E3. And this year's E3 was insane because there were so many like hugely earth-shattering reveals. Like the Final Fantasy VII, I forget what it's called, Redux or whatever.
Yeah, right.
That thing is like that Star Wars trailer we're talking about where the like people are freaking out. There's video on YouTube of one of the various live streams of that event shows four guys who are sitting there that are supposed to be presenters for, you know, the commentary, taking their headsets off and screaming and dancing around the room. Like they were freaking out. You know what I mean? And that's how you sell your film, your game, you know, you name it, that exposure. In a kind of like parallel issue to this, there's a similar conversation about convention exclusives in regards to the gaming stuff that I'm really involved in, like the various tabletop games and whatnot. For example, with Comic-Con, it's the HeroClix, and it's currently it's only really HeroClix and Magic the Gathering that have con exclusives that they give out at San Diego Comic-Con that become worth an insane amount of money. They're, you know, obviously they're very limited supply and everything, and it becomes this huge like thing where regular customers get all miffed about it, and rightfully so, because it's kind of a huge pain in the ass if you can't get access to things that are really cool for the game that you love just because you don't happen to live on that part of the country where going to Comic-Con is convenient. You know, I mean, like I live in upstate New York. To go to San Diego Comic-Con would cost me probably $3,000 easily. Oh, wow. You know what I mean? Like, well, between plane ticket and hotel and, you know, all the round trip, you know, all that kind of stuff. Right. And then to buy all the stuff that I want to buy while I'm there too. You know, that's a huge investment. And New York Comic-Con is similar, but it's not the same. Yeah, right? Exactly. You know, and so there's a big conversation is like, should they be doing that? And some of the cons are shutting them down on that stuff. They're saying you can't sell these things here because what you end up with is you get all these people that just get in line to buy these con exclusives and then flip them on eBay or wherever because they just want to make a buck. And so that defeats the purpose of what a trade show is supposed to be, which is where you get out there and you get exposure with your fans and you like get them up close and personal with your product, whether it be the trailer for the new film, whether it be the new models for HeroClix or whether anything like that, a video game, seeing gameplay footage and stuff like that, getting to play a demo and stuff. It's an advertising opportunity. That's why these companies spend the money to get there, to get that front exposure with everybody and get them as close to a hands-on experience as you can with things that aren't generally hands-on. So that's where I think they need to keep their focus. Like they got to be like, yes, we want people to show up and come check out all this cool stuff and buy our merch and all this other stuff. But then we want to get everybody else pulled in too right afterwards. Like don't leave the people who didn't go out in the cold being like, okay. Yeah.
You want to make that's profits. You want to make mouthpieces. You don't want to alienate the other larger part of your audience.
Right.
Is what you're saying. Yeah. Going back to DC and the way they handled that stuff, I was actually listening to another show and they knew I was in the live chat room. So they asked for my opinion. This is before the trailer for Suicide Squad was released in high quality. And they said, you know, everybody's complaining about the Jared Leto Joker. The pictures and they're like, man, this is a horrible promo. And I had to bring up the point. It's like, but DC's always had a horrible promo. Go look up Heath Ledger Joker.
Exactly. Go look when they first showed the photos of Heath Ledger as the Joker, it was not favorable.
And even go back to the very first teaser trailer for Batman versus Superman. A huge Batman fan sitting here. I've got Batman tattooed on my arm. Love Batman. Not so much Supes until Henry Cavill took over. He's okay. It's a character thing. It's not the actor. Mm-hmm. But I'm watching it, and even I'm sitting in the theater, did not know this trailer was coming. I'd heard rumors they were making the movie, knew they'd cast Ben Affleck, knew they'd cast Henry Cavill, of course, and that was about all I knew about it. And here comes the teaser trailer. I'm prepared to have that little girl squee moment, and it sucks so hard. I'm like, what the hell is this movie about? Yeah, the only good scene was of the statue of Superman where the spotlight comes up, yeah, and it says false god. I'm like, that's awesome.
That was an awesome scene.
But the rest of it was crap. And I had to point out on the show, I was like, DC marketing doesn't understand how to do their job for some reason until they get into it better. Then they get to Comic-Con, right? And that trailer was amazing. That's
rock solid.
It was. And everything going forward is going to be rock solid. Suicide Squad. I saw the freaking group pictures that they officially released with everybody posing in front of a gray wall.
Yeah.
You know, and like that looks like the dumbest movie I have ever heard of because of this picture. It just looks like crap. You're not explaining to me how Will Smith is going to work. I see Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I see iRobot. I see all these movies I like with Will Smith that does not fit DC at all.
Well, we're seeing the same thing with the, you know, the Apocalypse stills. You know, the stills.
Yeah. Oh, God. He looks weird, right?
It's not weird. He just looks short. First of all, it looks like Storm could just push him over.
Right.
And then
it looks like a Doctor Who villain.
You need, yeah. I mean, this it's notorious in this, especially in the pop culture geek kind of movie side of things. When you get a still before the movie, it doesn't always capture the kind of thing that you want to see in a trailer. And you're not seeing these characters moving. You're not seeing them acting. You're seeing them standing still. And it's really easy to judge and say, ooh, okay, they're going that direction. Those look like, doesn't look like he's got web shooters. He looks like he's just shooting the webs out of his hands. I'm not sure about this.
Yeah.
And then it takes like seeing the trailer, it takes seeing the movie to be able to say, oh, okay, you know, Heath Ledger, man, totally pulled it off. One of the best performances of the Joker ever. You know, maybe that's what instead of worrying about trailers and shaky cam, maybe studios need to relax on releasing stills and footage beforehand. You guys saw the Ghostbusters shot, right? With the four women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did that instill you with confidence? Does it?
Actually,
does it
kinda, that one actually kind of did. It took me back to when I first saw Ghostbusters. And it was like, that picture had the vibe that I was looking for. But I like Melissa McCarthy in a huge way. Like, I hear you.
Let's move on to our next topic here. Phase 2 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is now complete because of Ant-Man's release. So where is everyone? Where are all of our characters? And IO9 has a great compendium, a great list of the status of all of the main characters, Avengers and otherwise, where they're all at the end of MCU Phase 2 and where they're going from here. For example, Iron Man, who really took the brunt of all the problems from Ultron, is basically recovering from the fact that Ultron almost destroyed the world. At the moment, he's not part of the Avengers, and I guess we can say that's a spoiler from Avengers 2, but that's a while ago. You guys should have seen it by now. However, there is more that you get as part of Ant-Man to that story. We won't talk about that till the end of the show in our spoiler segment. Captain America, again, kind of taking on leadership of the Avengers. We saw that at the end of Avengers 2 when he's kind of leading the second force with Falcon and Scarlet Witch. And even
Tony Stark says, you're in charge or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Basically says, yeah, here's
the
keys.
Boss man. Oh, yeah. I provide the toys. He's the boss man.
Right, exactly. Hulk is a big mystery, a big question mark. There's rumors that he's going to be in Civil War, but we don't know because he basically disappears at the end of Avengers 2.
Jumping ahead a little bit, I'm reading through Civil War now for PXP, refreshing it, and he really doesn't make that much of an appearance in
Civil War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not a functional player in this thing.
Well, yeah, because he's away. The thing you have to realize, though, is with the MCU, we have a much more lean list of characters to pull from, you know, because in the comics we can just have anybody walk in on, you know, from off camera at any time. But we can really only pull off of characters we already have, which we have an awesome cast of characters now. I mean, it's a lot deeper than it looked like it was going to be initially. So that's cool. Watching Ant-Man without getting into spoilers, we'll get into some of that stuff later. I was getting really excited at how they're doing a really great job of presenting the myriad of characters, like presenting Scott Lang as Ant-Man is an everyday kind of guy. He's smart, you know, he's clever, he's agile or whatever. He's using technology and science to support him, but he's still kind of a street level guy. And then we've got Thor, you know, we've got Hulk, we've got all these different characters. So it's really interesting to see the way that they're all playing off each other. I think the Hulk dynamic will come back in because people love Mark Ruffalo as Hulk. He's just done such a great job. He's brought a humanity to that character that just didn't exist with the guys who were doing it before. I like Eric Bana and I like Edward Norton. Like, I've enjoyed films that they're in. I've enjoyed their roles. Nobody has been the Banner that I want to like root for and I want to follow like Ruffalo has, because he's so tortured and, you know, he's just like, he's carrying the burden of the world on his shoulders, but he's also still kind of witty and he's got some snide remarks here and there. And the biggest thing is he really cares about everybody. He cares about the other Avengers. He especially, you know, Natasha, he cares about the impact that he has. So I absolutely think they'll find a way to work that into Civil War, because Civil War is ultimately the buildup is, well, what's best for everybody. And then the fallout is
one side or the other.
Right. At what cost? You know, like,
yeah.
So I think we're destined for some cool stuff. The big thing right now that I feel like is I wish Ant-Man had done a little better in the studio, or I'm sorry, the theaters this week.
Going box office.
Yeah, box office.
Well, I have a thought on that when we get to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can transition.
It's not spoiler at all. Yeah. It's just I don't know about worldwide. I can only talk about my limited experience here. But it opened up, right, this weekend. It's supposed to be this past Friday. So, of course, Thursday night, there's midnight show. And I had things going on. I wasn't going to be able to do it. But compared to, jumping ahead a little bit, compared to Age of Ultron, I was able to find midnight shows over the weekend, through the week, and into the next weekend for IMAX 3D, for regular 3D, and for just standard 2D film. And my family, I like the 3D sometimes, but my family tends to prefer the 2D on it. So we go to the normal film. Plus, that's the cheapest. It's easier to go to more films if you save some money. Ant-Man, adversely different. As apparently when I talked to the theater about it, I complained a little bit about their time, show times and availabilities. They did the same thing to Terminator Genesis here also. IMAX 3D, tons of show times. Mm-hmm. That's where also they make their most money, coincidentally. Mm-hmm. But tons of show times for that. Regular 3D, not as much. Regular 2D, two times a day. Ant-Man had been out for weeks, and now it's just
that's crazy.
I didn't know it because I didn't try to go to Genesis yet. I'm not sure if I'm going to make it in the theaters for that. But apparently they said, they did the same thing for Genesis. And it's partially the movie companies that dictate it, but it's also the theater company as well. I didn't compare it to other theaters. I only go to one of my favorite. That's what I go to. But I think that might hurt Ant-Man's box office if you're pushing IMAX so hard. And honestly, you guys can disagree. I'd love to hear it if you do, but I don't think Ant-Man's an IMAX movie. It just didn't strike me as that.
I wouldn't have minded seeing it IMAX, but we did see a 2D. One of the people we were with just can't do 3D, and we didn't have her. We've made special 2D, 3D glasses for where you take the left lenses of two 3D glasses and make a new pair of 2D glasses so that she doesn't get the double image.
So it relines it, but it puts it flat. Okay.
Exactly.
I would never have thought of that. See, the things you learn when you know Ibbot.
It's life hacking right there. Yeah. You got to tape it up a little bit, but it works pretty well.
That's awesome.
But I would have liked to have seen it in IMAX. And looking back on it, if I do see it again in theaters, which I might, I'm going to shoot for either seeing an IMAX or an IMAX 3D showing of it. Let me really quickly just kind of wrap up a couple things on this list just so people can go check out the rest of this. But it talks about everybody from, your top tier Avengers characters like Black Widow and Hawkeye, who we're both going to see in Captain America Civil War, as well as like The Vision, Black Panther, War Machine, Ant-Man, Thanos, we're probably going to see in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And Nick Fury Samuel L. Jackson has said that he's not going to be in Captain America Civil War, which is kind of a surprise to me because I would think that he would be at the forefront of a...
No, he disappeared during that.
Did he in the comics he did?
I'm mixing some storylines. So I'm not all the way through the full range of... He showed up at the end, but he was kind of... Okay, in Captain America Winter Soldier, when they're underground, because he was supposedly killed, right? Mm-hmm. That... When I saw that, I'm like, but they kind of took that from Civil War. Because he didn't get killed, but he basically got disgraced and was underground for Civil War. And he was helping pull the strings a little bit, but he wasn't that involved. It really was Cap versus Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And Spider-Man was pivotal, and Hank Pym was pivotal. Those are the four main pivot points in the whole thing. And Fantastic Four had some interesting things to it, playing sides and deepening the storyline, but they can easily be removed from the movie, as obviously
sure
they are.
They'll have to be, yeah.
But the biggest one...
But we're getting Spider-Man. I mean, hey.
Yeah, he was the key. Iron Man, Captain America, and Spider-Man represented us as the reader, the decisions mm-hmm. we'd have to make, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I'm glad they got him back, because it's not so...
See, now, the interesting thing about the Spider-Man point, because he is pivotal to Civil War, there's been a lot of speculation in some communities that I've seen where people are talking about Hawkeye potentially getting trumped up in that position instead, because this Spider-Man is teenage Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. So he's much younger. He doesn't have a wife. He doesn't have a family. You know, Aunt May is much younger, as you know, we know, because Marissa Tomei was cast as Aunt May. So it seems,
I know.
Yeah, it seems like he's going to be pulled in as a like comedic relief and to provide some more scope and everything and set up future stuff. Whereas I really feel like Hawkeye is probably the one that's on the chopping block because
he's
Hawkeye,
got close to lose.
Nobody knows about his family except the Avengers. You think that will play in. But here's the thing. He doesn't have a secret identity, and Peter Parker did.
Well, here's the thing, though, too. Like, people say that he doesn't have a secret identity, but he's an agent, a super spy. Like,
and
just
and
because
his,
we
family is his secret identity. You know, the fact that if he goes through and has to register with the mutant, or I'm sorry, the Superior Registration Act. Oh, don't sue me, Fox. Then his family all of a sudden does become public knowledge. His name becomes public knowledge. And all of a sudden they become a danger to.
But isn't the Registration Act supposed to keep that stuff secret? I mean, that was the idea. And at the end of.
No, that's the whole point of it.
I mean, but it's not like you're going public. Here's the thing. From what I understand about Civil War, and again, we're digging into it. We'll really hammer this out in PXP. But if you read the seven main stories, the idea was you have to register, then you automatically work for the government. It wasn't necessarily that everybody knows who you are. Now, Peter Parker did it with Iron Man as a huge tour de force, you know, show this is, I'm doing this in public. But at the very end of Civil War, Iron Man's giving the mother of one of the children who became the face of the humans, right? The face of the humans in the Stanford bomb. The mother of one of the kids that died. She's throughout this whole thing. And that's Tony's, I mean, Tony locked on her. You're not in a sexual way, but in a, this is, I've got to fight for her. I've got to save the planet for her and stop this from happening. So she's at the very end of this thing getting a tour of this base. I can't remember if it's base or helicarrier or whatever, but he says to her, there's nobody better to keep the secrets. And it indicated to me that I couldn't tell if it's him or her, but somebody was going to be actually keeping these files secret. So when you register, it's not necessarily that you're public.
Sure, I see what you're saying.
Well, but the problem is, especially in the MCU, is Hydra has infiltrated everything.
This is true.
You know, I mean, this was the arguments, without getting into a whole political conversation, this was the argument about like stuff like the Patriot Act and the NSA, you know, all that kind of stuff, is that if there is a repository for all this information, just because the current people in power, the current people at the wheel aren't going to have ill intent to leverage it, doesn't mean that somebody doesn't get access to it in the future. So when you catalog the secret identities of all of these people, you know, and all of these, you know, whether they're super, you know, essentially godlike being aliens from another, you know, world, or they're just regular people on the street, you give power to somebody who can obtain that information.
Yeah.
Now, in the case of somebody like Thor, Thor is going to be largely unaffected by everybody knowing anything about him because he's a god.
Right.
You know, he's an alien from another world.
He's the
My name is Thor. Alien. Here's my real name, Thor.
Son of Odin.
My address, Asgard.
Yeah. But when you're Clint Barton and you have a wife and some kids sequestered away at a farm in the middle of nowhere, all it takes is somebody getting a sniff of that, and then they can track it down, and now they have leverage. You know, now they can use, and I think that's exactly how it's going to get played out. I could be wrong. I mean, they could be going in a completely different direction, but I really feel like that's what they're going to do, is they're going to try to leverage that, because I think he's going to be that linchpin where it's like, oh, I'll back up Tony here, and oh no, look what happened, kind of thing. I don't think they're going to go to the full length that they did with Aunt May in the comics where, you know, she gets killed. I think it's going to be almost there. Maybe the wife could be hurt or killed. I don't think they'll kill kids in an MCU movie.
You know what? I didn't think there's a spoiler that we'll get into later, but I didn't think that Marvel would do the darkness like that. And then in Ant-Man, they did. And it was like, what?
There's
a couple. Yeah.
So everything's open. Here's what we have. We have Joss Whedon built the House of M, basically. Mm-hmm. Okay. He came in, and I know he didn't do Iron Man, and props to the guys who did Iron Man and Civil War. Captain America and Thor. It got the ball rolling because it's very, very important to do it.
Sure.
But the world latched on to Avengers, and we're used to a Whedonverse. And Whedonverse is he'll kill anybody.
Right.
And Marvel might have adapted that. There's many directors doing this stuff, and everybody has their own flavor. But as a whole, Marvel's controlling the continuity. They may bring out stuff we would not necessarily see coming, or honestly want. I don't want anybody in Hawkeye's family to be hurt. Man, stop.
Right.
You stop speaking that juju, Ricky Bobby.
Yeah.
Moving on, kind of to center more on the topic about Ant-Man. We all saw Ant-Man, which pulled in a little over $57 billion in million with an M in weekend box office. Currently has an 80% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but that's with a 92% audience approval rating, which I think My opinion is it means it's going to be a big word of mouth movie. I think it's going to probably follow the path of Guardians of the Galaxy, where people are like, this might be the Marvel movie that I skip, until they start hearing their friends and relatives raving about it and sending them to it.
It's good. I don't think that it's on par with Guardians of the Galaxy, where Guardians of the Galaxy is just such a smash hit where you're just like, this film was amazing. Like, I can't believe I just watched this. Like, because just every twist and turn in that, you're just like, this is great. That was also driven by some amazing editing and some amazing work with the licensed music. You know, they just created a whole vibe with that film. Ant-Man didn't quite do that, but it still, it was like, you know, it's got its own little motion. You know what I mean? It was a fun, tight little film for me. Like, I was like, man, this is a really tight, compact film. It wasn't bloated, you know, because that's another thing is people complained about, some people criticized the second Avengers film with being a little bit bloated on the runtime, you know, being almost 3 hours there. This film was much tighter. It got to its point. It didn't spend a lot of time doing setup. It just, you know, skipped right along. I think a lot of people will end up watching this out of curiosity. Like, some of it will be word of mouth. Like, yeah, my friend said this was good. And I think other people will be like, oh, I'm going to get around to it. I just don't think that Ant-Man as a character that inspires the same kind of hype that a lot of these other characters do.
Sure.
But I think they ended phase two appropriately with it.
Yeah.
You had such big arcs, such big, you know, there's the heaviness of the Avengers, which is appropriately heavy. I mean, when I see Avengers, I want it to be dark and heavy. It's so much to process, and they deliver.
It's a little breather. It's a little it's in between course.
It's a little icing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. In between courses.
But still, with a little bit of that, in the after credits, it's still a little bit of that. Uh-oh.
Well, yeah, and it does, number one, it does set up some stuff for Captain America Civil War. Again, no spoilers. We'll talk about that more later. But you do look at all these characters and say, while we're probably not going to see a few of these in Civil War, you know that we're going to have to see a lot of these in Infinity War. And if you're thinking that there's bloat in Age of Ultron, holy cow, Infinity War is going to have all the Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
All the Avengers, you know, most of the Avengers that we've been introduced to up to this point. Loki will probably somehow be involved. Right?
Infinity War, and I'm going to go read that too, but I read it a long time ago, but it's going to take every character we know of and then some.
Right.
To run that. And
Doctor Strange will be involved. Black Panther will be involved. Like everybody that they're going to introduce between now and then. Inhumans, does that come out before or after?
It comes out before.
It comes out before. So yeah, Inhumans will probably be involved as well.
That film's casting budget is going to be so obscene. It's like when they start bringing everything together. I mean, we're going to lose some people along the way. We can be sure of that. You know what I mean? Through one thing or another. We know some people are only contracted for X amount of movies, stuff like that.
Sure, of course.
Like for example, I don't think Cap's going to make it beyond Civil War is my personal prediction. I think we're going to see him fade out one way or the other, and somebody else is going to rise. Hopefully somebody else rises up and assumes the mantle.
Captain Marvel could certainly do that, because we've got the Captain Marvel movie coming on 2018 as well.
Wait for Captain Marvel.
Well, even beyond that, there is a tool in the comics that actually aligns for that. Captain America is an icon, and so it's not always Captain America.
Sure. Currently, it's not Steve Rogers. It's Sam Wilson taking the mantle, right?
I know Bucky Barnes did it for a little while. And it could actually be leading to that. So
I think that's the logical direction we might be going in right now. They could just skip that, though, and jump right into Falcon. We have Falcon, you know? I mean, that's another thing that exists, you know what I mean?
The way they're playing this character, I'm not sure. He looks up so much. I'm not sure that he would, as a character, would want to take... He'd be overwhelmed by it, I think. I don't know. Maybe.
It's early yet, though.
Hulk. Let's see the Hulk as Captain America. America smash. And that actually fits our culture right now. So, all right.
One last news story to talk about today. Benicio del Toro. This has just been announced. Academy Award-winning actor Benicio del Toro is in talks currently with Disney and Lucasfilm to play a major villain in Star Wars Episode 8. Although discussions are in the very early stages, it's believed that del Toro already has an offer on the table. So, was he Fenster in Usual Suspects? We're going to get Fenster as a
we're going to get the Collector as a Jedi.
Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting that he was a Collector. There's another great Marvel MCU Star Wars connection there.
I'm for it. I love him. I think one of my favorite films with him was Snatch. The Guy Ritchie film from
Guy Ritchie's the man. He's at the American Madonna for a while.
I love that. I love both of the films he did in that era, Lock, Stock, and that film.
But I really loved the opening of Snatch, like, and with Benicio del Toro being such a key, like, aspect of that. Like, it was just, I remember watching that when I was in high school. I was so confused by that film. It took me like 3-4 times to watch it.
Well, you needed subtitles for Brad Pitt's lines.
Yeah, right? Oh, he did great. Gutter Irish, man. That was
So yeah, I'm excited at this casting. This could be, he brings a certain gravitas when he wants to, you know what I mean? And then sometimes he's just very flippant, but yeah, I could see him being every bit as evil as we would hope he would be.
And you know, with J.J. Abrams being at the helm, you're not going to get that Samuel L. Jackson moment that we got in the other Star Wars of, I'm tired of these Jedi's on this planet. No, nothing.
Well, all right. I don't know if we can bleep all of that.
You're setting yourself for a lot of work, Charles.
But, you know, honestly, I'm looking for what I originally personally got out of the original set of Star Wars. And that was, as a kid, and with the fact that they only could use mostly practical effects, that it was a futuristic sci-fi movie based in some form of reality. There was a dark grittiness to the bar, man. There was a dirtiness to the Millennium Falcon. There was just something tangible to that movie that the 1, 2, and 3 did not capture for me. Yeah. So I'm hoping with stuff like we've seen in the previews with, oh my God, that destroyer in the sand. Holy cow. I saw it again last night on the big screen. I'm like, oh my God. And then you're talking about Benicio del Toro and those level of actors. I have high hopes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I am not a fan of 1, 2, and 3. I saw them when they came out. You know, I mean, I became a Star Wars fan literally right at the time of the special editions coming out in the late 90s when Lucas went back in and added some computer-generated effects and stuff. Like, I had seen them as a kid, but I really got into them when I was in junior high. Like, I nerded out. I was like, this world is sucking me in. You know, I love everything about it. I love the technology. I love the characters and the cultures and all this stuff. Like, I just dug it. And so I remember, like, my parents let me skip school on the day that those movies came out, nice. Each time when they re-released those three. And my two best friends and I, we would go see them in the theater at first showing that day and then hang out. And at the time, the Star Wars CCG was available, the card game. So we'd go buy packs of that and be like, oh, we'd just be total little nerds, really enjoying it. And with 1, 2, and 3, I never got that feeling. Like, I never felt like, oh man, this is so good, and just so like sucked into it. At first, I was like, all right, those were Star Wars films. Like, okay, the lightsaber battles were cool, and that was about it for me. One of the biggest things that I hated about the first three films was that it didn't feel like the same world because of the computer graphics and the design on like the technology and stuff. Like, they smoothed everything out when everything in the original trilogy was all boxy and like, it's kind of like the Mad Max approach where like the Rebel starfighters are like cobbled together. You know what I mean? They're like, you can tell that they're just, it's a rough gig. And I didn't see that in the new first trilogy, quote unquote. Seeing the trailer for this film, I felt that rush of excitement again from discovering the original trilogy as a kid. I felt that like everything looked the way I expected it to. I was just being pulled into it. I was anticipating what was going on. Like, I was like, what? Oh, there's a Star Destroyer in the sand? Like, what? Yeah. What is going on? There's an X-Wing. What? Oh, look at these new X-Wings. Because that was like the thing. I was like, oh, wow. It's like they're, because the X-Wings are slightly different. And I was like, that's so cool because they still look like X-Wings, but they're a step forward in the chain. You know what I mean? Like, they're a design forward or whatever. So you can tell that time is past and whatnot, but it's still the same world to me. I have really high hopes. I might just have to give up Star Wars films altogether if this movie isn't as every bit as awesome as I hope it is. What Abrams was able to do with Star Trek, not all Trekkies are fans of the new Abrams Star Trek films, but I thought he revitalized the franchise.
Sure. Yeah.
And just brought a new level of energy and love.
And the only way that it'd work in a Star Trek universe, divergent timelines.
Yep. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, that's what I think we're all ready for, is something new. Because the second movie basically was The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. Excellently done,
but still, you know, we're ready for some new storylines. I mean, you've got an infinite universe of stuff to work with, stuff to pull from. And I think we're looking forward to the next Star Trek movie being some of that original kind of storyline stuff that right. was promised with the Divergent timeline.
Are you guys excited that Heimdall's now joining Kirk? Idris Elba, I'm not sure. I mean, there is no character that I know of, unless they changed a race of a character. There's no character that I know of in the Star Trek universe that he could play that would be up to his acting level, because he's a majorly good actor.
Sure.
So I'm hoping it's a brand new character.
It'll likely be a new character, but yeah, we'll see what comes of it, you know. I would love to see them kind of start hinting at some TNG stuff, like just little Easter eggs in the next Star Trek film.
Like Q kind of flies by or something.
No, not necessarily that, but right now, timeline-wise, would be around the time that those major characters from TNG would be, like, kids and born and whatnot, okay. all that kind of stuff. It would be cool to see, like, maybe Klingons are involved in the next one again. You see, like, Little Worf kind of stuff, because that would be cool. But not Little Worf in the way that we got Little Anakin Skywalker.
Alexander, yeah.
Oh, well, not that either. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
there's a right way and a wrong way to do all that stuff. But yeah, I'd love to see them start building up to tying in with some of the rest of the franchise and stuff, because they've got, like you said, infinite potential there, just as Star Wars does. I mean, they can go, if they keep their heads in the right place, they could do almost anything, and it would be great.
Let's move on to our next segment, which is what we're currently reading, what we're currently playing game-wise, watching on TV. What kinds of things are you guys enjoying? Charles, let's start with you.
I'm playing Future Fight on iOS still a little bit. Not nearly as much as I used to. The other game I play all the time is Marvel Avengers Alliance, and that stepped up with the content and the deep storylines and the deep attraction that makes me keep going back there. Whereas Future Fight, I don't feel a pressing need. Like, nothing's going to run out that's important to me if I fight it. Mm-hmm. Although it's fun. So I play Future Fight on iOS, Avengers Alliance on Facebook. On my Xbox, I'm way old school, man. I just downloaded Gears of War 3 as the new Games for Gold on Xbox at the end of the month. Love Games for Gold. It's amazing. Still playing Gears of War 2. I love Gears of War. It's one of my favorite military shooters. It's not even military. It's just not even that class. That's what I call it, because they're cogs, damn it. I'm reading Fear Itself and Civil War for PXP, and then we'll be moving into the Infinity Gauntlet, the Infinity Wars, Executioner Song. I want to bring that up. I haven't read the Executioner Song in a long time, so I'll read that. And then I'm excited about the Starz original Ash versus the Evil Dead. I almost slapped somebody over this the other day. You're such a huge Bruce Campbell fan. I watched every last bit of Burn Notice only because Bruce Campbell was on there.
Well, it helps that you've got Sam Raimi involved. You've got Bruce Campbell involved. Yeah. I mean, this is going to be good fan service.
This is going back to I mean, I think Sam Raimi did a disservice with Spider-Man. That's just my opinion. But the Evil Dead original 1980-something version was supposed to be this scary, schlocky movie, and it was so well dialogued as far as the goofiness and the one-liners, and so well delivered that it became this great horror comedy and had a cult following. And then they really took that tactic with the other movies, Army of Darkness being one of my favorites, and they did well. Then
that first film scared the crap out of me.
Did it really?
Yeah, the original whole Evil Dead. The chick in the basement being chained down there, and
when they're so funny.
It was so campy.
Yeah,
it was so campy, but it's. As like preteen me trying to watch it, you know, many years after it had come out, though, and I'm just like, no,
yeah,
no, very scary.
Rock it back and forth. I get that.
Oh yeah, dude.
But then in the last couple of years, I don't know if Raimi, I don't think he did. I don't think he had anything to do with it. They did a CW teen movie, Evil Dead, where they made it serious, right? And I remember my kids seeing the preview, like, of course it scared them a little bit, but then I started getting mad, like, why are you mad? Is it because it's a horror film? I'm like, no, because they bastardized the real meaning of that movie. And I went off on the whole Evil Dead and how it's supposed to be campy, and they ran to their rooms crying. But I'm just such a Bruce Campbell.
Daddy mad at TV again.
I'm just such a Bruce Campbell purist, man, on that. When that teen-based movie came out, I was like, that's such crap. Why would you? So I'm very excited that Starz has got Sam Raimi. They've got Bruce Campbell. They're doing Ash versus the Evil Dead. And the preview that's officially online, just I watched it over and over and over again.
And it's this so fall, right? Is that
it should be coming this fall. Cool. It's a TV series, so it's even better. So now I have to figure out how to get Starz.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's it for me right now.
Paul, what are you currently enjoying?
I haven't had a lot of time to watch much. I've been throwing on Idiot Abroad on Netflix.
Oh yeah,
on in the background here and there. I will say that that show is hilarious.
Yeah, it's so
and
raw.
Just oh, it's so great. I love the way Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant just mess with Carl all the time. Really, really, really good show. I'm
perfectly spherical head.
Yeah. I am just about finished with the second season, so I'm getting close to getting into the third season when Warwick Davis joins him.
Oh, God, it gets so good.
Yeah, so I can't wait. I was really surprised. I thought it wouldn't be something that I enjoyed, but I do like travel shows, and I do like good comedy, and he is truly an idiot at times, so I've been enjoying that. But I've been gaming a lot lately. Things have been kind of crazy because the new Magic set came out, Magic Origins. That came out 2 weekends ago, so I participated in 3 pre-release sealed events for that and scored in prizes every time. That was quite good.
Awesome.
Which I'll circle back around to that because I have a funny story about it. Also playing HeroClix. We're right now in the middle of the Age of Ultron storyline event each month, which is a combination of our store is doing, we're swip swapping weeks where we do 1 week of sealed where we open boosters and build out of what we opened. Then the next week we do constructed, which is we bring stuff from our collection and then, you know, try to build competitive teams and fight each other. And there's special unique prizes for all of that business. But also for Dice Masters, also from WizKids, is Age of Ultron. The Dice Master set just came out and that's been out about a week. And we drafted that last week and had a lot of fun with that. And there's been some excitement about that. Lots of new cards, shaking up all of that game. They did a cool new thing in the new set where in the previous sets, they've had super rares. There's been 4 super rares per set. Usually you would get like 1 per box, maybe 2. This set, you're pretty much guaranteed to get 2 per box, but there's 8 super rares. And 4 of them are Marvel Zombies alternate versions of characters that are already in the game. So there's Magneto, Electro, Red Skull, and Gladiator as zombies. Additionally, they've added the chase element from HeroClix to Dice Masters where you have a chance to open a full art version of those zombies. And my roommate and I opened a box just the other day and we actually pulled a full art zombie Gladiator, which is kind of cool. And those are worth like the price of the box and then some kind of thing.
The zombie dice, are they like eaten away on the sides and like that corner's missing right there and there's like exposed bone underneath?
Oh, that'd be cool.
But those dice are unique. Each of the zombies comes with its die, obviously, in its booster pack, and it has a limit for 1 die. So you only ever need the 1, but you do need the 1 because it's a unique die to that card. Which previously was only ever done with one of the Phoenix organized play promos. It had its own unique die. It was the AVX event one. It's kind of crazy. Like they when they come into play, they knock out all other versions of themselves. So like if I'm playing with Magneto and you play a zombie Magneto, all of my Magnetos go away because now you're a zombie.
Interesting.
Yeah, they have cool counter powers and stuff like that too, like to lock out certain things. Like the Red Skull makes it so Captain America can't attack, and like it's really cool. They've done some really interesting things with the design direction they went. Also, this past weekend, I played in the special Ant-Man mini tournament event at my store for HeroClix, which the prize for that was if you would play in a 4-person sealed single elimination, or I'm sorry, draft single elimination pod, and whoever won the little mini tournament would get an Ant-Man ID card for the current relic for that game. That was pretty cool. We got to play with some of us open DC War of Light boosters. Some of us opened Guardians of the Galaxy. And then I even think there was like 1 random Flash booster that was opened. So it was kind of like a weird amalgamation of like everything coming together and Green Lantern smashing the face of Guardians characters, all that kind of stuff. That was pretty fun. And yeah, so that's mostly what I've been doing. It's just been like jam-packed with unique gaming opportunities recently and been having a lot of fun with that.
Personally, I've been doing like a lot of MAA, trying to wrap up this current PvP tournament, which ends in less than 24 hours. Been reading the Spider-Verse on Marvel Unlimited. Another couple issues got released as part of that this last week. So catching up on more of that. There's, I think, just maybe a couple more weeks left of issues of that series appearing on Marvel Unlimited. So in a couple of weeks, you'll be able to read the entire thing on Marvel Unlimited. I've been playing a lot of Capitals on iOS. It's also available on Android. It's a word game that involves some territory building, and it's kind of a good strategy plus word game. And then been watching Penny Dreadful, catching up on that, because I hear such good things about that show, and I can see why. It takes all the stuff you wanted American Horror Story to be and really delivers on that.
Yeah.
Really good show.
First season of that show was fantastic.
Yeah. Cool. I'm up about 3 episodes in the second season, and there was I'm not gonna ruin it for anybody, but there was an episode after the end of it, my wife and I went, why did they make that episode? Maybe it'll come out later in the season, but it really didn't make sense. But it was a character development one, and it was all right. But yeah, that's a good show, man. Glad you're watching.
And that's what I've been working on and enjoying lately.
Real quick before we move on, another good show to catch. I believe it's still on Netflix. Not in quite the same vein as Penny Dreadful, but the same kind of period piece is...
Peaky Blinders?
Yes, Peaky Blinders.
Oh, so good.
I've never heard of that.
That, McFall, you will be a big fan. It's
how do you spell it? Killian Murphy, Peaky Blinders, P-E-A-K-Y, and then Blinders, how it sounds. It's Killian Murphy from Inception, and takes place around the same time. Is it London? I guess it is. Well, it's outside of London.
It's in Birmingham.
Birmingham, right.
Yeah, it's about a pikey gang up in Birmingham. And it's right after World War One, before World War Two breaks out. It's basically centered around it's a gypsy family, but that comes
gambling
and horses, all that kind of stuff. It's underworld type stuff, but it's so, so good. So many twists and turns. I believe the first two seasons are out right now. There's another season coming. I just could not believe that show.
Yeah. Okay.
I was blown away. And it's a real sleeper because not a lot of people talk about it. It's a really killer period show. It's just like Penny Dreadful in the fact you just like get a real sense of, you know, how it might have been to live at that time, as well as just really compelling character driven drama and action and just awesomeness. It's fantastic.
I second that recommendation.
All right. And my wife loves period pieces. And I got to tell you, if I got to sit through one more Call the Midwife, I'm going to just I'm going to make her sit through Daredevil again. That's all I'm saying.
How does she do with gore?
She's good. No, it's not
Penny Dreadful level gore, but it's there's some violence.
Maybe this will help set the tone for you. The theme song to the show is Red Right Hand.
Yeah, by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. They use it a lot too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's another thing. As a music fan, I actually think I was thinking about you when I was watching it a bit, because I was thinking like this, there's a lot of great Coverville material in here, because they keep finding different cover versions by different people of that song done in different styles to, you know, inspire different moods.
Right. Yeah. Depending on what the scene is like. And I've actually aired a couple of those on the show. There's that High Speed one that I think is by Ash, if I remember correctly. Good music in there. PJ Harvey. Worth checking out for sure.
Cool.
All right. Let's go into the wrap up here. And this is where we do kind of allow ourselves to talk about spoilers. So if you have not seen Ant-Man yet, that's probably going to be the brunt of it. I can't think of anything else that we're really going to spoil. So,
I agree right now. That's going to be it. But, you know, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. coming out, Agent Carter coming back out, we're going to get some more Netflix shows. There's going to be a big spoiler section in the future here.
But we put this at the end of the show, so you can say that this is the end of the show for you if you have not caught up on all those things. So we'll leave it at that. And I'll move this wrap-up thing to the very, very end of the show.
So the question is, what does the final credit scene mean? Because I actually had to go look it up online because I didn't catch what Cap said, the words Accords.
Yes. Yeah, the Accords, if you're not familiar with the Civil War storyline, then that's going to, you know, you're just going to be thinking Hondas.
But they don't actually use the word Accords in the Civil War. So we're thinking that it is a line to it.
Oh, don't they? I thought they did. I thought that's what, because I had to look it up online myself.
Yeah, it didn't pop for me. And I'm in the middle of Civil War. I mean, I read all the Seven Main, and I'm going back through the expanded universe on it. And maybe I just missed it. I did obviously recognize Winter Soldier. How the hell did he end up in that vice grip? we don't know. Because we left Captain America Winter Soldier with Bucky wandering the Earth Kung Fu style, as it were. And of course, what do you think Falcon means by bringing in Ant-Man?
Yeah, I don't know. So maybe cryptic. He's so tiny, he can kind of get in that that little vice thing that
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. We don't know if they're against Bucky, if they're
helping
Bucky.
I think they've got him captured, I think, is the deal, right? I don't think it's like a he's on our side now kind of thing.
Yeah, it's so cryptic. Are you trying to interrogate him? What is Ant-Man going to do here?
He's going to have to break in somewhere and steal something. God,
yeah. Fair enough.
So can we have a brief conversation about how the fight scene
between Falcon and Ant-Man was the best part of that entire film.
Oh, it was so...
It really was well done.
It was so well done because they were just so... Goofy is not the right word. They were so amateur about it. That fit, yeah. I felt. Mm-hmm. I think they were intentionally amateur.
I felt like it hit every beat, like especially at the end where he's like, target lost, don't tell Cap about this.
Yeah.
It was great. Really, really well done. The whole film was really well done. There were some elements of it that I didn't think I would care about. Like, I didn't think I'd care about the three goofballs in the apartment. And by the end of it, I'm like, man, they were kind of pivotal to the story.
Yeah, they brought the lightness and the joking when it was not appropriate for the main characters to bring it.
Right.
And I loved the back them up scene. Just back it up. I think it was a home run in the respect that it was really well done. It's a great setup to go forward with. I thought everybody's performance was rock solid. Yeah,
I knew. Now, I did not pick up when he's showing the pictures of the Stark warehouse. I didn't immediately think that's the new Avengers headquarters. But I knew as soon as he showed himself to Falcon, I'm like, that means something. Because mm-hmm. now the Avengers know he's there. Stark will right. at least have access to the files for Hank Pym and know who Hank Pym is and know what his dad did with that. This means something. And then at the end, my kids didn't understand what he meant. It's like, so I asked if Falcon went to the girl to kill to Raul to come to me because he knows I'm tight with Ant-Man. And Paul was like, and what did he say? He said, yes. And then they end the movie.
Right. Well, they've also got, exactly. Like, you know, basically saying, all right, we've got one that jumps. It's probably the Hulk. We got one that swings, which is Spider-Man. Probably, well, no, then he says we got one that crawls up walls. So I'm thinking the one that swings is Thor and the hammer.
Okay. Maybe.
And one that crawls up walls is Spider-Man. So it's a really kind of cool saying, do we want this guy for the Avengers? And Falcon's answer was yes.
And that could easily be, or does Falcon want a round two? I think it's not. I think he realized the potential there.
Well, I was going to move on to another spoiler. The Wasp costume reveal at the end. And not just the way that it's, you know, all right, there's that costume, but the way that it's positioned, which is absolutely a throwback to the way Jack Kirby drew, you know, one of those early kind of fashion model appearances of Janet Van Dyne with her fingers outstretched behind her and in that pose. It was such a nod to the fans. Loved that.
Yeah, they say they're building it, and I noticed there's only gloves in the main suit.
Well, there were the wings as well.
Well, the wings. I'm trying to picture some of the Janet Van Dyne wasps. There were some long-sleeve versions, but I guess there were the short-sleeve ones as well. But
yeah, it seemed like there was a little more than that. I mean, there was the helmet and the full body. It seemed like the legs were exposed and maybe the forearms were exposed.
I don't know. It's just like any more. But then he says, "Yeah, we need to finish it or whatever." I'm curious what that means. Also, Evangeline Lilly has not been announced in casting in any further movies yet.
So. I think it's just a matter of time. I think we're going to see her in Civil War, even if it's like kind of the way they use War Machine and Falcon for Avengers 2.
Yeah. I love Anthony Mackie. He's like in every Marvel film since. Winter Soldier so far. It's great.
Right.
You know.
Well, I like that they use people like that.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have to be a main character in every film. That's comics. Like, you know, when you're reading a comic book and, you know, your favorite hero's getting their beaten, all of a sudden so-and-so shows up. Like, it's classic in, like, Spider-Man type stuff. You know, like, oh, I'm getting my ass kicked. And then all of a sudden somebody swoops in and helps me out.
Right. Here's Human Torch to kind of help save the day, for sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yep. I think that's great. I think it's fantastic. And I want to see more of that. I want to see, like, keep sprinkling them in. Just let them come in for a little bit and leave. They don't have to be a main part of the main story. Just, like, make me feel like this is the real comic world. You know what I mean? Like, these people are around. And because, you know, that's one of the things that people talk about with comics is how it gets kind of crazy sometimes, where you're like, how come they just don't call the Hulk, you know, like, to solve every problem and stuff like that. And it's like, well, because everybody's running around doing all these different things. And Falcon happens to be in upstate New York and just gets his ass kicked. You know, like,
it sounded like he was babysitting the base.
Yeah.
It sounded like.
Right. Right. Somebody's got to, you know, stick around there, answer the phone, and it might as well be Falcon.
He did a fine job. He just wasn't prepared for somebody who shrinks.
We also can't be 100% sure of the exact timetable. It's entirely possible that Ant-Man takes place. Oh, no, wait. Nope. It takes place after
That's right. Age
of Ultron. It totally takes place after Age of Ultron.
Because they reference the city thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I forgot about that. I was going to be like,
dropping cities.
Yeah.
Hank Pym was very Hank Pym about that, wasn't he?
Dude, Michael Douglas was great, man.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where in the initial promo for everything, they said, casting Michael Douglas as Hank Pym. And I cussed at my screen. Like, what? He's too old. What are you doing? You're not doing my Hank Pym. But then, you know, as I just let that go away, because I think being a purist about something takes you out of the joy of what can be. And right, so I try to let go of what little I hold on to there. Go, okay, let me see what they're going to do. And he did. It was a great storyline. Until this movie, I was not inspired to even find out who Scott Lang was. I knew there was a Scott Lang. I didn't know other than that. I didn't know what it was. I researched it. I like it. I love what they did with the movie. The fact that it's him and God, you know, Paul Rudd does such a great Paul Rudd, you know.
Nobody can Paul Rudd like Paul Rudd.
It's like, you're going to get him the same in almost every movie. It's like Samuel L. Jackson. He's angry black man in everything, okay? But he's also wise black man. He's never wise man. He's always got that ethnicity to him. He brings it. It's in a good way. In a good way, brings it.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd brings out that everyday man, the lovability, the underdog, if you will. And that being the pivotal movie for Ant-Man to introduce Ant-Man to the universe was great, because all you want to do is root for him. And when Hank Pym, as we've discussed many, many times on other shows, he could be a douchebag. You know, he knows he's the smartest man in the world, and that brings its own set of problems.
Absolutely.
So other spoiler. As soon as I saw the tank on the keychain, I went, that's not Hank Pym's house.
You know, it's funny.
And it
the
was.
People behind me were talking loud enough to say that same thing. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's funny. That would be hilarious. And certainly was what they did, was the route they went. So big kudos to you for not saying it out loud in the theater.
Oh, no. That's
those chumps behind me who did.
I didn't think about the Pym particles with it, but a tank on a keychain is just not Hank Pym. He's super genius. He's not exactly anti-violent, as we saw over and over again, but he's not the go get your guns and blow up the world guy.
Sure.
You know, he's like, oh, I can outthink you. All right, I built this. Well,
I'm going to keep this handy. I'm going to keep this tank handy just in case. It's so more of a memento of fighting in the war. But
I kind of thought it was. After I saw it, I was like, that's something.
They're going to use it. Yeah.
It dummy me. Well, not dummy. Really, I'm just enjoying the movie as it unfolds. I don't try to get ahead, but then I'm not going to die today, and neither are you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you guys think that he was going to find Janet Van Dyne
when he did the subatomic level? Yes. You know, they don't introduce a don't cross the streams moment without there being, I'm going to cross the streams because I have to. And I thought for sure he was going to see her, or there was going to be some reference. Apparently there's vague reference to that. Who was it that said it? It was, let's see here. One of the guys involved with the movie basically says, I don't know if you caught any of the imagery as Scott is going down in the quantum realm. You might be able on repeat viewing, and definitely when you get the Blu-ray, to see something that the audience could see down there that Scott doesn't see that may play a larger role.
I was kind of looking. I did not catch it. I was trying. I was trying to see if there was something hidden.
He's vague about it, but it does sound like there's something.
Gotta get the Blu-ray now. Any other spoilers on that?
No, I think we talked about all the major ones. For sure.
Yeah. Darren Cross is no more. You know, that was interesting.
Yeah. Or, you know, that I think that was kind of the darkness that we were alluding to with Darren Cross just blatantly shooting a guy and turning him into a little blob of jelly.
And
then mopping him up with a paper towel.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy.
Yeah, my kids are very smart. And I let them watch, you know, violent movies, and they're very smart in how the world works. And they saw that, and it was just such a shock to them. One of them turns like, what is that? It's like, that's the dude. They haven't perfected shrinking, so he killed him. You know, then they're like, oh, okay, that was dumb.
What are they going to do to that lamb?
Yeah. Dude, what kind of ass he thumped the cage? It's like, dude, you didn't kill the sheep, but you rattled his brain now.
He's a dick is what he is.
Yeah,
they just want to prove that he's a dick.
And he's a bigger villain in the comics. I was surprised that they totally obliterated him.
So just to kind of wrap things up, we're pushing the time limits on this one. Well, we've broken,
in
the theme of the show, we've broken the time limit. We'll talk about what each of us wants to really quickly pimp, or Twitter or Facebook or whatever. The Star Wars CD is now available to pre-order. If you go to kickstarter.com and do a search for Star Wars Jazz, then you can find it. You can actually pre-order a copy now if you weren't able to get involved with the Kickstarter. it's available for sale, as well as t-shirts and USB drives and all sorts of stuff like that. For the next 2 weeks, I'm going to be out traveling around Nerdtacular in Salt Lake City at the end of the month. The 31st and the 1st, July 31st, August 1st. And then a week after that, out in Las Vegas for the Trivia Championships of North America. So if you're in that area, reach out. We'll grab a beer. And that's what's going on with me. Paul, how about you?
I am working diligently on the inaugural episode of Come Out and Play, my gaming show that I will be hosting soon. The format's going to be kind of like fast and loose. I'm going to line up some different guests to come on with me and chat about different things. Sometimes I'll have maybe one person. Sometimes I'll have a couple. We're going to talk about all things gaming. I'm going to spend a lot of time focusing on tabletop gaming because it's something I'm really passionate about. But we're also going to talk about video games and everything, like all the nerdy stuff. Good fun.
It's going to be awesome.
It's coming soon.
Yep. Can't wait for that. Charles, how about you?
Oh, I think Klaus is going to be so successful, he's going to make Whedon come and try to crush him. Will Wheaton.
Maybe both of them.
Maybe. Yeah. No, I think Josh will like you, but Will will be like, damn it, you made me look bad.
I think Josh will like you, but not Will.
Not Will.
Wheaton!
Well, I've been referencing the term PXP. I do a show with Uncle George, panel by panel, where we take on storylines for a comic. So we're talking about the arcs that go on. Like, we start with Dark Phoenix. You can find that one. We cover the entirety of the Dark Phoenix storyline, the history, and what it means to today. The second one out now is The Runaways. And originally it was a story arc and not a continuous comic. So we tackled the first 18 episodes of that and what it means to gaming and everything else. Currently, we've got a couple others coming up. Walt Simonson's Thor. Walt Simonson, period.
Right. Because he had a couple of runs on Thor, as you guys discovered.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I honestly don't remember what the other two are. We have other lines in there as well. War of Kings.
War of Kings, right.
Which was an interesting run. And now we're really trying hard to wrap up Fear Itself and Civil War, which are two massive arcs to record. Then on to other arcs. So I do that to do Ermagerd, the mashup show with my wife. It's a music mashup show, which is more about us and the comedy we bring and our love for the music. So you're going to get a good mix of that there. We all do From the Hello Carrier every Tuesday night. It's the number one news source for Marvel Avengers Alliance. If you play that game, you will want to listen to that show. It's there. And Success Freaks, I do that as well. There's all kind of stuff. Go to charlesmcfall.com. You can find it. Everything there. And the one thing, you know, I'm looking forward to most about Batman versus Superman is the outtakes, because I've got to see Ben Affleck's Batman going, "How do you like them apples?" So that'll make my day. I'm just saying.
Very good.
So we don't really have an ending here. So you know what? Go out, read more, watch more, play more, come back.
How can people reach this show if they want to send us an email?
That's a good question.
They can send us an email.
Go for it, Klotz.
They can send us an email at, it would be btp@giantsizeteamup.com. You just send a little email there. It'll come right to us.
Let us know what's on your mind in the realm of comic books and geek-related movies and TV shows and all that stuff.
Well, we'll have a Facebook page. We got to get that up soon. And then we'll have our own Patreon lounge. But for now, just start sending in your emails. So I think I'll go back to what I was saying. Go out, play more, read more, game more, watch more, and come back and we'll tell you what it all means.
Show the world your nerdity.
Graphic nerdity.